to another Global Crossroads conversation with Chris Smith and the author Mo Tejani.
Welcome to Global Crossroads, a series of conversations paralleling the book Global Crossroads. And it's best if you've read the book before you listen to us, but I bet some of you are cheating and listening to us. My name is Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb, and I'm with Mo Tejani, award-winning author. I can say that now.
Well, thank you.
He has a medal. We're on a chapter now, which is called, or you've just read a chapter, which is called Dog Karma, and it's the second of the chapters in the second part of the book. And
the
second
Culture
part
Warp
of the book,
series, yeah.
Cultural Warp. In fact, there are three sections in the book, aren't there?
That's right.
Do you refer to them as a trilogy? We haven't talked about
no,
that.
No, not really, because they're just three sections that have somewhat of a unifying thread running through them, but they're focused on travel, they're focused on culture, they're focused on exile. If one could use keywords, the first section of the book is all about travel and all the different elements that go with it.
Yes.
And the second one is different aspects of culture, culture clash, culture baggage, cultural harmony, cultural misunderstandings. And
yes.
The third one is all about looking back on having lived in exile and how that affects one's own sense of cultural, political, social identity.
And our challenge, and we're successful in parts of this and not successful in other parts, our challenge here in these conversations is not to give a summary of the
exactly.
the chapter, because
exactly.
we're assuming that listeners can read.
Or that you would be induced into reading it if you haven't already.
Okay, so it's the conversations might be a honeypot for you. So I hope we don't do that, because it's repeating it for the listeners and we don't want to be boring. We want to try and bring in some other aspects of this. Why Dog Karma?
Well, because the story talks about my relationship with dogs in different parts of the world, and yet it goes through conflicting situations in which sometimes I'm totally in love with the dogs that I'm around, and sometimes I'm not so happy with the dogs that I'm around. And there are many things that happen within the context of the story that make me realize that maybe my karma, in the Asian Eastern sense, is coming back to haunt me about dogs. And towards the end of this conversation, I will tell you how it's haunting me still. Wow. In other words, the dilemma that I pose in the stories has no definite resolution and is an ongoing process of discovery and reflection.
You're not a reincarnated dog, are you?
Well, if I am, I'm in trouble, because I haven't exactly been.
I'm curious, if you were, what sort of dog would you have been?
That's a different.
You've never thought of that, have you? And see.
No, it would be the golden retriever, and I'll tell you why. Without giving away much about the anecdote, the first anecdote in this story does talk about my fascination with a golden retriever, only because when I was a child, when I was young, I was very close to being attacked by a dog, and that subconscious fear in me stayed with me for a good 6-7 years before I was able to unlock it, unearth it through meditation that I was doing in southern Florida.
This was in the States where the
in
dog
the
attacked
United
you,
States.
Yes?
No, the dog attacked me in Uganda.
Yes, okay.
But that fear stayed with me all the way for the next 6-7 years until I go into a meditative state for a good 7-8 hours and realize that this fear is very much still in me.
I don't think of Golden Labrador being
the
ferocious.
Dog that attacked me was not a golden retriever.
It wasn't.
But the dog that I end up playing with right after the meditation happens is a golden retriever.
Oh, okay.
Hence
okay.
the fascination okay. for golden retrievers.
Okay, and if you're listening to this, you should be even more intrigued that you now want to go and read it because.
But you know, I bring in an element of one's own latent fears hidden deep within us. You know, in my case, it's this particular relationship with the dog that I was scared of when I was a child.
Yes.
But in other cases, it has been, you know, things like sexual abuse, child molestation, things like that, that are deeply embedded in our psyche. And until and unless we sit down with a monk or a psychiatrist or a friendly counselor to unearth those things haunt us.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. That was in the States. So you carried that with you when you first went to the States.
For a good 6-7 years.
Yeah. Do you think dogs in the States and dogs in where we are now in Asia are different?
It's not so much of course the dogs are different in terms of the types of dogs, but more importantly, the relationship of humans with dogs are not only different, they're certainly poles apart in some cases.
No, that's a much better question. Can I change my question? Tell us about the relationships between
maybe we should change the questioner and the answer person here.
Yeah, no, that's a much better question. I like that. It's, yes. No, tell us a bit more about that then, about human relationships with dogs.
Let's just pause this conceptual way, if you like, without really giving away much of what anecdotes are in the story. Dog psychiatrists.
There are dog psychiatrists?
LA, that's a very profitable business in Los Angeles.
No.
Yes. Dog cemeteries. Dog hair salons. And Chris, believe it or not, apartments just for dogs. Now, of course, this is one extreme of certain humans' relationships with dogs. But on this on one side of the pendulum, if you like,
yes,
there's this extreme fascination with dogs to the point of wanting to clothe them,
yes,
pampering,
yes.
Psychiatrists, special kinds of foods. On the other hand, you have countries, cultures, where dogs are wonderful hors d'oeuvres. Dogs are eaten as hors d'oeuvres with beer or as a delicious dish. Dogs are guard dogs. Dogs are animals that you keep to make sure there's no burglars that come to your home. Dogs are beasts of burden, dog races. Dog races are a very popular thing in certain parts of the world. And the dichotomy between the two is quite acute. So because my relationship with dogs, voluntarily or involuntarily, has been somewhat of a turbulent one, including here in Thailand, I felt it important to come to terms with it in the best way that I know how, and that's to write about it.
There's a lot of wild dogs around, aren't there?
Stray dogs is a huge, huge problem in Chiang Mai. And one of the wonderful ladies that I talk about, who was an icon in this city for trying to come to terms with the stray dog problem in terms of sterilization and in terms of training humans on educational aspects of animal welfare and what have you. This lady taught me a lot about how to change some of my negative perceptions about dogs and focus a little more on the positive. On the positive side, dogs are what people use when an earthquake happens and they need to sniff out where to find bodies. Dogs are also used in some cases for detecting cancer, believe it or not.
I haven't heard that.
Yes, it's on Google.
Yeah, well, it must be true. If it's on Google, it must be true. I know about bombs and drugs at airports.
Right, and dogs are what are used when somebody is blind and they become a guide for the blind person.
Have you ever had a dog as a pet?
Yes, I have. And I won't tell you what happened when I did, because it's in the story.
So, of course, I should have done it.
You know, again, it ties in with the idea of where does the East meet the West in terms of cultural beliefs, in terms of behavior, in terms of what we perceive as, you know, on the one hand, linguistically. In English, we often say, a dog is a man's best friend. And yet, on the other side, we have linguistic expressions that belittle people through using dog metaphors. Doggone it! What's up, dog? Is an expression used by a lot of black people in terms of saying hello to each other.
But they're not derogatory terms, though, aren't they?
Well, what's up, dog? I don't think it's a derogatory term, but I don't think it's a very complimentary one either.
Yes.
Dogs in certain Muslim countries, if you like, are considered, you know, linguistically they will say, you know, you're worse than a dog. And that's a very negative thing to say.
Yes.
You know, I focus on language quite a bit in the story because all I'm saying is I'm confused. I'm confused with my relationship with dogs because there's all these different languages and all these different cultures. And every single one of them has a different perception of relationship with dogs. You know, one might say how barbaric to have people in Vietnam and China eating dogs. But then vegetarians in India would say the same thing about anybody eating meat in the United States or in the West. So there's always a little bit of a double standard that goes with vis-a-vis relationship with dogs. It's okay to quickly jump upon somebody else's behavior as inherently and morally wrong. But yet, when one points out the same kind of behavior with a different animal, it's considered offensive.
We're strange creatures. Are dogs a metaphor for something for you in this story?
They're a metaphor for me in pointing out the wide gap that's there between the East and the West. I use the East and the West as a simplistic term for just pointing out different regions of the world. You know, dogs are eaten in many parts of Asia. Dogs are revered. And, you know, the movies about dogs, Beethoven, what have you, tons of movies about child's relationship with dogs, family's relationship with dogs as saviors, super dog, all that stuff.
They're all Disneyland dogs.
That's true, but yet it does endear people, kids watching those movies, as pets are there for endearment, for affection. You know, one of the things that strikes me the most unusual is I have been in situations personally where I've realized that the dog, the family dog, is revered by one person, often the parent, much more so than their own children. And I question that because I've seen it happen, and I think to myself, is the dog a substitute for the children because the dog will always give you affection and the child often doesn't? Is the dog a way of escaping the reality of the family life that this particular person is in? These are rhetorical questions. I don't have any clear-cut answers, but I sure as hell love talking about it because it makes other people reflect. You know, what is one's own relationship with a dog and where does it come from? Does it depend very much on the kind of background you had? Or does it depend very much on what mom and dad taught you? Or does it depend on what Disney taught you? Mm. Or does it depend on what mom and dad taught you in the store in Vietnam when there wasn't enough to eat and you needed dog meat to eat?
Yes.
That's the disparity.
Yes.
And I think I love exploring those kind of.
So a dog can a dog be just disclaimer is we're a cat's family here.
Are you?
And okay. I can associate with everything you're saying, but you have to change the word dog to cat.
To cat.
Except we wouldn't eat cats, right? It's but apparently they taste like chicken. But
well, I don't know. I've never ate one.
Oh no! In Asia, though, I think we learn to say we don't know if we've eaten one. Because you never know.
Be.
You could well have eaten it. And if you said to people, if you live in Asia, if you say, have you ever eaten dog? And they say no, you say, not that you know of.
Right.
And
one could say the same about certain places in the West. Horse meat.
Mm.
Dog meat used in hot dogs. One doesn't know. These are all questions. These are not specific
answers. So you're saying dog meat in hot dogs and keeping a straight face when you say that, Mo?
Well, that's why I say it with a question mark, because who knows if it's true.
Yes.
Right?
Do you think dogs could be a substitute for children?
Like I said, I've seen it happen.
But that was with children in the house as well. So if there were no children there, does, you know, it's...
Well, no. I'm talking about the parents,
yes.
Not the children.
Yes.
Yeah. I had that's one of the stories that I talk about, and this is a story of a family that grew up in Uganda, ends up in the United States, and the relationship with dogs changes drastically because the culture changes, and yet the relationship the children have with the dogs is very different from the one that one of the parents has with the dogs.
Yes.
So it goes into that area of how cultural norms change over time and over as one moves into a different culture in a different context, you know?
I had an experience with dogs in Guangzhou in southern China, uh-huh. Walking into a market and there were dead dogs hanging up and they were getting the hair off them using a blowtorch.
Oh my God.
And what stays with me, and it's still with me now, is the smell. Right. Now in the book...
That singeing smell.
It's difficult to talk about smells in a book, isn't it? Are there any smells that come with this particular story, or that you think of? Or
not so much that I can recall. The smell of having a dog attacking me and being almost at my throat and seeing his fangs appear and the smell of the dog was a very strong fear in me, including the smell. I could smell that dog 5 years later.
Yes.
Whenever I did think about the dog. So in that sense, yes. But other than that, not much more. No.
What else? Any favorite parts in it? Or No, we have to be careful not to give it away.
Right. Well, I won't tell you much except to say I talk quite a bit about the whole court case of Dingo Stole My Baby, which was a huge court case still going on.
Oh, in Australia?
In Australia. Made into a famous movie with Meryl Streep.
Oh, what's it
called? It's called Dingo Stole My Baby. She was brilliant in that, by
Dingo
the way.
Dingo Stalked by...
Stole My Baby.
Oh, Dingo Stole My Baby. Okay.
Yeah. It's a very famous court case. On the one hand, it's dog lovers. On the other hand, it's people saying that this is ridiculous. This is child abandonment. The mother should be crucified, etc.
Yes.
Again, a huge swing of the pendulum. You know, so one never knows. But I think it might be interesting for people to know, you know, why the need to write this story.
Good question. I wish I'd thought of that one. We should swap roles, Ash. You must tell me more questions when we're doing these.
Like I said, we can switch seats now.
Mo, I have a really good question. Why write this story?
You know, in the last 4 months, Chris, just to bring it home to current day reality, I'm writing a book. I'm doing this project with you of doing podcasts as well. And every day when I go home, right next to me, in a reasonably quiet street, are five dogs, beagles. And the puppy that was born 6-8 months ago has never stopped barking.
Oh, but beagles are cute.
They're wonderfully cute until you have to write. and need concentration to write, and having the yak yak and the yelping of the dog day and night, Chris.
Yes.
I'm not, it's okay for half an hour, for an hour, what yes. have you. You know, noise pollution is a major problem in Thailand. And I'm not just talking about dogs. It's a variety of different kinds of noises. But the fact of the matter is, this particular dog yelps in the middle of the night, wakes me up, is becoming so annoying that it's creating tension between me and my partner, you know. And yet going to the neighbor and saying, please respect our sense of
sanity.
Sanity, they're oblivious to it.
Yes.
Because they have a totally different relationship with their dog.
That wasn't what caused you to write the chapter, was it? Was that?
No. I'm saying the dilemma of my relationship with dogs, even though the story is written, the dilemma is not over.
the story continues.
Exactly.
I want to ask you what you're going to do with this dog, but I don't know whether I dare. Is it?
I've had actual illusions of, you know, poisoning the dog, getting the dog to go move to some other farm. And then I've had wonderful thoughts of, you know, maybe helping the neighbor find a dog trainer so that this dog wouldn't bark as much. But a lot of it deals with training the dog when they're very young.
So during this chapter, and thinking back to having read it, there's a bit of a love-hate relationship here with
very
dogs, isn't
so.
There?
Very
it's,
much
It's not
so.
Just East versus West, it's love versus hate, isn't
love
it?
Love versus hate, East versus West, double standards on dogs, linguistic confusion about dog language, all those things come into play. And, you know, I've had a dog as a pet. I've also had a cat as a pet. The only reason I prefer cats is because they're much more independent. And they're much more self-sufficient. When they want food or when they want affection, they'll come to you saying, hey, I need affection now. You know, while a dog, in some ways to me, people might not agree, is a little more subservient. The affection is always there. Whether you ask for it or not, it's always there, which is endearing in some ways and somewhat subservient in others.
Yes,
depending on your point of view.
I asked you earlier on if you were reincarnated and what you were as a dog before. If you were a dog now, let me ask you two questions. What sort of dog would you be? But the better part of it, though, is where would you like to be? Because then this highlights the cultural differences.
Well, Los Angeles is a good place. Much as I don't think it's kind of ridiculous to have dog psychiatrists and to have dogs dressed up.
You want to be spoiled, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. If you're going to make me a dog, at least put me in a place where I have my own apartment. I don't have to pay the rent. You know, I get steak for dinner every day. And no problem.
Okay, but you have to have the right owner, of course, I guess.
Absolutely. It has to be somebody that pampers me all the time and at the same time loves me as much as I love them, supposedly.
A bit like now as a human. So dogs' needs are the same as human needs when it comes down to it.
In some ways, yes, for affection. But, you know, the one thing that is amazing about dogs, and it's only because they can wag their tails and we know, and humans don't have tails to wag. We have words or touch or things like that. For the most part, a dog is always, always loyal.
I knew you were going to say loyal.
And affectionate.
Yes.
And very protective of their master or mistress, what have you. And these are all qualities that are very positive, right? Sometimes we see them lacking in humans, and we see them in dogs. But by the same token, you know, there's guard dogs, and then
there's
wild dogs,
and the
dogs that attack babies in one case, and bite humans, and then the whole question of rabies and all that comes into play too. There's no clear-cut answers, and I'm certainly not trying to pause clear-cut solutions in the story. I just want people to say, hey. Reflect on this.
I know how to make you a bit more loving of dogs. Is I was sent some pictures the other day from Japan, and apparently at the moment there's a craze in Japan, and these pictures are wonderful. If this was a video podcast, I'd be showing them now, video conversation. And What the craze is to pamper your dog. Pamper's the wrong word. Is to style it so it looks like a different animal. So there was one which the dog looked like a tiger, and they'd actually, you know, sheared its coat and actually painted it and made it up. And it looked like a tiger. And there was other ones that looked
like... But in real life, you mean?
Yeah, in real life. See, these dogs are alive.
But Chris, I have a totally different perspective. If I was a human and you're trying to make me into somebody from Mars, I wouldn't like it very much. So why should a dog?
Because they're loyal, as you say.
Well, it's because they don't have any choice in the matter.
Mm.
Right? Mm. Different perspective. Mm. Who's to say what's right and wrong?
Mm.
But I do think it's robbing the dog of its identity.
Really? No, I don't. They looked happy.
They looked happy.
Yeah, they looked happy.
You see, this is it. One of the greatest anomalies, I love this word, in human beings' behavior towards dogs is we project our human perceptions, emotions, attitudes onto dogs and say, of course they're happy, of course they'll love this. We have no idea. We don't speak dog language. We never did.
Oh, but if they have, they wag their tails.
Well, they wag their tails, you know. They also know where the bread is, the bread is buttered on. You know, there's food at the end of the day that's not going to be there if I don't behave in a certain way.
Yes.
That's one perception.
Right? Yes.
Pavlovian dog training.
Yes.
But, you know, the dogs in this particular story are a metaphor for me. I ran a cross-cultural training agency for quite a few years. And in there, I realized that cultures, wonderful as they are, ancient as they are, rich as they are also the culprits for things that much more serious things like war and violence. From culture comes belief. From belief comes obsession. From obsession comes do it my way or the highway. From that comes violence. From violence comes death.
Mm.
Now, it's not a clear-cut linear progression in that way, but that there is that pattern that we see day in and day out in our world. So I feel obligated to talk about cross-cultural issues, did quite a bit of training on these issues. And I would purposefully challenge people to reflect on their own values and challenge them to look at those same values as practiced in a different manner, in a different form, in other cultures. Because that's the only way that I can think of where there'd be a little more of a greater understanding between peoples and between cultures, end goal being less violence, more peace, more harmony, more understanding. We need to get to that point.
Mm.
The more we get into a global world, not just with the internet, but the more we get into a global world with easy travel and what have you, the more it becomes even more important to assess our own cultural baggage, whether it's with dogs or any other metaphor that you like to perceive, you know.
Right. And all that came out of a chapter called Dog Karma.
Well, I think
that was pretty deep, actually.
Yeah.
Though, right?
Probably deeper than the story itself.
That was pretty deep, actually. It's wow. What have we missed? Ah, come on, you're asking me. What other questions would you ask yourself?
Chris, what questions should you ask me now?
Have we missed anything, or shall we bring this one to a close?
Well, oftentimes you ask me, would you like to use a quote from the story?
Oh, yes. What about a quote from the chapter?
My favorite quote in the story is, it's a dog's life. Which is a very common expression used in the United States when things are not going the way you planned. It's a dog's life.
But there is an irony there, because we've just been talking about dogs who actually get mollycoddled and spoiled.
That too. That's one end of the spectrum. And on the other end of the spectrum things are not going so well. It's a dog's life.
And that's the quote. It's a dog. There's no punchline.
There's no punchline.
Because if it was a dog's
life
on the front...
Every story doesn't need a punchline.
No, it does if it's on a T-shirt.
Oh, I see.
If it was a dog's life on the front of the T-shirt, I wonder what would be on the back.
Charlie Brown on a T-shirt once said, I love people, but I love my dog more. Right? not the greatest of quotes, but I think it reflects a certain
It's a warm, fuzzy one to finish this conversation on, I think.
Yeah, because there's no clear-cut answers, but, you know, let people make their own conclusions of what their relationship with dogs is and what they think relationships with dogs should be.
Just like life.
Just like that.
No, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And ladies and gents, thanks for listening. And we will be moving on to the next chapter. So your challenge is read it before you listen to us. And the next chapter is called Mother India, which is a long chapter, isn't it?
It's quite long. It's almost, in fact, it is mini novel length. But it goes into a variety of different issues of identity
and no and dogs?
To a certain extent, culture.
Any dogs?
No dogs.
No dogs in India.
Lots of cows, though.
So the next one is going to be called Mother India, The Life of a Cow.
The Life of a Cow.
No, thank you very much. Ladies and gents, talk to you next time. Have fun.
Thanks again. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.
This recording is one of the Global Crossroads Conversations with Chris Smith and the author Mo Tejani.